Accession number 28897, Reel 3.
What happens next?
This is the second reel of a taped interview with George Oliver in his home in Perth, Western Australia, on the 27th of the 1st, 2006, for the Imperial War Museum in London, and the interviewer is John Bannister. George, could we begin the interview by you telling us basically what was to happen following you receiving your wings? An important occasion for a young bloke wanting to be a pilot, obviously.
Yeah.
You've just got your wings, off into Geraldton you go. What was to happen next?
Well, we still had some a bit of flying to do, and we carried on with, and I think I might have mentioned that before, a bit of machine gunning and bombing and that type of thing. So we carried on so far as the flying was concerned. There was a bit of social life in Geraldton, of course. There were girls there about our vintage, and we liked to meet up with them at dances and stuff like that, so we went to a couple of dances and that type of thing. But from my memory, we didn't stay in Geraldton very much. One little incident was that Tom Scotland and Lindsay Fairclough and myself and Jim Mudy, they were four mates, and we went over for a swim at the back beach, and we went for a bit of a swim, and then Lindsay and I were sitting down on the beach outside, and Tom and Jim Mudy were in there, and we heard them calling out all the time, and we thought, oh, perhaps they're in trouble. Lindsay, after a while, he said, oh, I better go and get some help. There were some people up the road there somewhere. And so I thought, oh, well, I can't just sit here while he does that. I better swim out and yell out to them and see. Then, right, I swam out to yell out to them, but I must have swum too far because I got caught in the same riff as they were in. So we were trying to get Jim, who was in a bit of bother, trying to hold him up and whatnot, and of course Tom and I were getting pretty tired, and then suddenly a man appeared down the beach a bit. Lindsay had found him, and he apparently was familiar with the area and the routes and so forth, so he just called out to us and said, swim parallel to the floor, to the shore. So we swam parallel to the shore, and eventually we got onto sand, in, you know, about up to our shoulders high. So that was just a little episode that frightened hell out of us at the time, and had nothing to do with flying. But
wouldn't possibly compare to what you were going to be frightened by later on.
No.
As a young pilot now, obviously you're usable, and presumably you realise that you're usable.
Yes,
at some
yes.
stage someone's going to want to use you.
Yes.
What was going to happen? What happened next for you in that regard?
Well, we did realise that, and we pondered it, wondered what would happen to us. Some of us were obviously going to overseas, and some of us staying in Australia, because the Japanese were now in the war, and our country was at risk as well.
What were your hopes? What did you hope would happen for you?
I'm not sure that I had any particular hopes.
Did you want to go overseas? Did you want to stay at home?
No, I didn't want either, really. I don't think I sort of cared. I just wanted to do whatever I was told. I think that was my attitude at the time. When I found out we were going overseas, I was a bit tickled pink, really, though. We went down to Perth after we completed at Geraldton, and we had some embarkation leave. And we were sent to an embarkation depot down at, it was somewhere near where the bus station is in Perth now, and it was just a timber frame group of huts there, but it was an embarkation depot where people were herded before they went overseas and whatnot. And we were of the opinion, and it turns out to be true, that we were going to Rhodesia to do some more flying in Rhodesia. I might have mentioned this before, did I?
No, it's all right.
No, that was before we went flying. I'm sorry, I'm off the beat there.
That's okay.
That was before we went flying. No, we came down to Perth and we went to the embarkation depot at what was the Princess May Girls' School in Fremantle. I don't know if I mentioned that last time. But anyway, we went there and had pre-embarkation leave, and we realised then that we were going overseas. And I think, as far as I was concerned, I was quite happy about that. And we were guessing that it would be the UK, but no one told us where we were going. And of course, in the meantime, we had quite a bit of social life. I went home to Mum and the family, and I had a particular mate, Bob Potts, and he used to come out because he came from Kalgoorlie. And we went to dances in the Palace Hotel, you know, the Palace Hotel in... not dances there, we went there for our drinking talks and whatnot, you know, and a bit of a lunch or something. And it was more or less the Air Force dive in those days. The dive, we used to call it the dive, there was a downstairs bar there, and we used to meet there. And we used to go dancing at the...
was the embassy?
Yes, there was the embassy. We went dancing at the embassy. And the YAL Hall too. There's a YAL Hall there in Irwin Street or somewhere there, I think, that we used to go dancing in as well. And then I might have mentioned it before too, that we used to go on the Emerald and the Zephyr. They were two ferries, two pleasure craft that we had on the Swan in those days. And had some good times there. Of course, chased the girls, and I had two or three different girls I was interested in, but nothing that I carried on with. It was just one of those things that young blokes do, you know. And then eventually the time came to go down to Fremantle, and we used to march around Fremantle. They had us down there a bit in camp in this ex-girls' school, and we used to march around the streets in Fremantle to keep us out of mischief. But eventually the time came to go down, and we went down to embark on the SS Nellore. That was a little sort of a tramp steamer, I suppose you'd call it.
You'd received your wings in September of 42. What time frame between that and leaving Australia would there have been?
I had my 21st birthday in Perth. That would have been 22nd of October. I remember that because Mum scolded me because I had a couple of beers. She didn't like me drinking, and so I remember that. And so I would say we had our Christmas. I can't remember having Christmas, but we were at the showgrounds in Melbourne on Melbourne Cup Day, which is the first Tuesday in
November.
So in the meantime, we'd got from my birthday over to Melbourne in the SS Nellore. And this little ship had an Indian crew, and because of their religion, they had live sheep on board. so that they could slaughter them in their own fashion. And they looked after us, gave us cups of tea and treated us like VIPs. There was just a few passenger places on the ship, you see, which was really a cargo ship. And so we had quite a pleasant trip across there, and I can remember seeing an albatross or albatrosses flying behind the ship and thinking to myself, gosh, I don't know much about flying really when I see them hovering along for hour after hour. And then we used to stand up at the bow of the ship and look over, and you see the dolphins would be swimming along in front of the wave, in the bow wave. And and of course we played games and mucked around.
On leaving, what was it like? What was that occasion like, actually realising, well, I'm actually going off to war? I mean, you mentioned you were a bit tickled pink that you were actually heading overseas.
Yeah.
This wasn't actually a overseas vacation you were on.
No, it wasn't. We knew in the back of our minds why we were going, but I don't think any of us gave a great deal of thought to it at that stage. I just said goodbye to Mum. We weren't supposed to tell anybody we were going anywhere. We were just down at Fremantle. But I said goodbye to Mum and the family and went down there. Some parents turned up, but I was a bit more, possibly a bit more security conscious than some, and I decided I wouldn't ask Mum to go down. I think probably I was a bit scared of being a bit traumatic about it myself, you know. But anyway, she didn't come down. And so we just said cheerio to a few people on the wharf and away we went. I don't think there was much talk about what we were going to. We were just guessing that it was the UK.
Well, my impression is too that people didn't talk. They didn't want to show any kind of sort of concern about what they were in for.
No, well, that's true, because I think I've mentioned before, you're psyched up to some extent to what's happening around the world, and I suppose just the same as we these days we have this terrorism and whatnot, and we don't dwell on it as much as we would if we were sort of mixed up in it directly, I don't suppose. And we weren't mixed up in it directly at that stage, so I suppose it would be something similar. But we certainly weren't going on a pleasure trip or anything like that, but being young, we enjoyed it as much as we could.
Well, here you are ending up seeing things that you wouldn't normally see. Albatross following the ship.
Yeah.
Dolphins in the bow wave.
Yeah.
What of other parts of the world? Where did you end up first?
Well,
port of call.
First port of call was Melbourne, and we were there on Melbourne Cup Day, and we stayed at the showgrounds, which is adjacent to what's the race track there?
Flemington.
Yes, and I'm pretty sure we were just able to walk across to the race track. So a group of us went over there one day, and on the Melbourne Cup Day, to see the race. And of course, we knew nothing about horse racing. I'd never been to a horse race, and I don't think many of my mates had either. And we didn't even know how to put a bet on, but we all went and put a bet on some horse or something like that, just to be in it, you know. And we had a good time that day. And here again, we went ice skating. I might have mentioned this before too. We went ice skating, and I spent a fair bit of time sliding around on the floor and in my blue uniform. And my girls, of course, thought it was most hilarious. I had been roller skating in Perth, but I found my ankles weren't up to ice skating. I don't know whether I've got weak ankles or not. So Melbourne was quite pleasant, and then we got on the Remyataka, which was had been a cruise vessel during the prior to the war, and so we were put in cabins. I think there were more people. We were more of us in the cabin that would normally have been in on a cruise, but it was relatively comfortable. Certainly different from the troop ship we came home on, and certainly different from the troop ships that my dad and the soldiers and whatnot went on. But so it was quite comfortable, really. And there were a few passengers also going over to the UK. I think some of them had been possibly mixed up with the diplomatic service or something like that, and there were a few passengers on that. So we went across to New Zealand, and we went into Wellington Harbour and had a few, had a couple of days out at a New Zealand Air Force base. They entertained us, and then we hopped on a train, and we went up to Wellington. We went up to Mental Block.
Auckland?
Auckland, yes, up to Auckland. And in the meantime, the ship was loading stuff for the UK, food and all that type of thing. And we had about a month, I think, up there, or a couple of weeks. No, we had a fortnight up there, that's right, fortnight. And we were entertained out of the farm. One of the families there, just outside Auckland somewhere on the coast. And one thing I remember too was going for a swim at a beach nearby, and the sand was all black volcanic sand. But it didn't have any dust in it, so it didn't make you dirty or anything. It was just pure black grains. And, of course, the beauty of Wellington as you sailed in there struck me, because it's a very pretty scene. I've been back since, and it's a very pretty scene as you sail into Wellington Harbour. And it was so different from what I was used to in Perth. Then when we were in Auckland, there were a couple of incidents, little anecdotes I can tell about that. We were wandering around the Auckland one day, and a big Maori soldier came up to me. He was a big fellow. He'd be as tall as you, and only bigger in body, and had a bottle of beer down his shirt. And he said, "Here, have a drink of beer, Aussie." So I thought it prudent to do that, so I took the bottle off him and had a couple of gulps, and it was warm and I didn't like it very much. So I said, "Thanks very much," you see, and handed it back to him. "Oh, no, no," he said, "it's yours, Aussie, it's yours, Aussie, drink it all." So he was so big and strong, and he was... He got a few beers under the belt himself, so I suppose I was a bit chicken. I said, "Oh, well, I better drink this." So I drank this beer, which made me sick in the end. But once I drank it, at any rate, he slapped me on the back and just about knocked me over, and then he wandered off somewhere. And another little anecdote in New Zealand was, I don't know where we'd been, but we'd been somewhere, and we decided we wanted a taxi. But at any rate, a car drove up, and we were staying at the YMCA in Auckland, and a car drove up, and I'm not, to this day, I'm not sure whether it was a taxi or just a car we got a lift in, and pulled up, and there were two chaps in the front, the driver and a passenger, and they said, "Would you like a lift?" And we said, "Oh, thanks very much," you see. There were, I think there were three of us, and we hopped in the back, and at any rate, we knew enough about where we were to realise that when we got along the road a bit, we weren't going in the right direction, you see. We were going out of town instead of into town, and so we said to the chap, "Look, you're taking us the wrong way." would you please pull up, and if you're going this way, and we'll hop off and get another lift somehow. So at any rate, they just ignored us and kept going. So we did this about three or four times, and then in the end, one of my mates got a bit wild, and he leant over and he grabbed hold of the tie. The chap in the front, the passenger in the front, had a tie on him. He grabbed this tie and pulled his head back like this and said, "You better stop this car or you'll be in trouble." And so the driver stopped it then, and we all piled out. So we don't know to this day what they were up to. We drew the conclusion that they were going to take us somewhere and get our wallets. That's what we decided. But that wasn't certainly a typical of the hospitality. The hospitality in New Zealand was wonderful, and that was just one of those little incidents you could get in any city. And I don't quite know how we got back to the YMCA, but we did anyhow. So
you're definitely having an adventure by the sound of things, and you're not actually that far away from Australia.
No.
What was it like, though, on leaving New Zealand? Tell us about that trip, and where did you go first?
Well, we became so friendly with the people on the farm and whatnot that it was a little bit sad departing, really, and we went to another family too, myself and Max Hubbard, he was another friend of mine, there, and we became friendly with these people. And after Fortnite, it was a little bit sad to be leaving, to tell you the truth. But anyway, we knew we had to go, so we didn't dwell on that either. But then we got in the ship, you know, on the Rimutaka, and headed for Panama. And we had a fairly uneventful trip over there, but now they made us do submarine watch. We had to do 2 hours a day each. Everyone had a rotation to do 2 hours submarine watch, and the captain was keeping away, as I understand it, the captain was keeping away from the normal routes that ships were taking in those days across to the Panama. But nothing happened to us, fortunately, and we had a lot of fun. On board, there was a piano there, and there was some talent. We had some chaps that could play the piano, and we had a violinist and piano accordionist, and of course there was the usual gambling, playing poker and stuff like that, and deck games. And so, really, we had a reasonable.
What was your quarters like?
Quarters. Oh, the quarters were quite good, really. They were cabins. As I said, it wasn't like a troop ship. It was we had cabins, but we were crowded into the cabins a bit more than they would have been. The food, I don't really remember much about the food, but I don't remember that I complained about it at all. Then eventually we got to the Panama Canal, and this was a real eye-opener, the Panama Canal. For someone who'd just grown up here in Perth and seen nothing much in the way of engineering and stuff, except perhaps on the mine when Dad was there, but I was too young to appreciate it then. We got into the first lock, and you had to go through several locks up to a big lake at the top. I think it was called the Gatton Lakes or something like that. It was quite a bit above, or it still is, of course, quite a bit above sea level on both sides. So you went into these locks, and then they had big tractors along the side with cogged wheels that were pulling the ship through. I remember thinking at the time, because this was built in the late 1800s, there was a tremendous loss of life there through mosquito diseases, malaria, and some of the others that I can't think of at the moment, but a lot of people lost their lives, and a lot of them happened to have been American Negroes that had been taken to the United States as slaves. And just to make the story a bit more interesting, after the war, Jean and I went through it again, and we had a Negro, an African, Panamanian, I suppose you'd have to call him, taxi driver, and he was a great bloke. He took us around and to all the shops and things, and told them not to cheat us, and carried on a bit. And he took us to some church where the altar was laden with all golden ornaments, and the altar, I think, was had gold plating and all this sort of stuff on it, and told us a story about some pirate. What was his name?
Morgan.
Pirate Morgan, who was rather famous in Panama, and he told me then that his father had come down from the United States to help build that Panama Canal, but he'd survived, but he'd spent the rest of his life there, and this chap had been born there, so he was a proper Panamanian. So we went through these locks up, and I was so impressed with the fact that you could practically put your hand out and touch the jungle. They just cut this canal through the jungle, and it was very impressive as far as I was concerned, and also I think most of my mates. And then we got to the top and sailed across the Gatun Lake at the top, and went down the locks the other side. First of all, I should mention, I suppose, if you want anecdotes that aren't necessarily a credit to me either, I think it was Panama City. I don't know which side, Colon. One's Colon and one's Panama City, and I can't remember which side's which now, but anyway, first one we came to, I think it was Colon. Some of us had to do duty at the gangplank, just to check people on and off, make sure no strangers got on. And I had this job for a couple of hours one day, and some American sailor came up to me and said, "How are you, Aussie?" And he said, "Oh no," he said, "Where are you from?" I said, "I'm from Australia." So, "Oh," he said, "I've got a brother out there flying somewhere near Australia in the Air Force." And he was a sailor, this chap. He had a sailor's uniform on. And he fished out a bottle of whiskey, you see, a little flask of whiskey, and said, "Have a drink." I said, "Oh, I shouldn't have a drink. I'm on duty." He said, "One or two won't hurt you." And so, of course, being stupid, I had one or two. Well, I think they might have been laced, because I ended up waking up on board the ship and I was in plenty of trouble for drinking this damn whiskey, and they told me, the officer in charge told me, I wasn't going to be allowed off at the next stop. But anyway, after we got going through the canal, he came up to me and said, "Oh, you've just been a stupid young bloke," he said. "You can get off at the next stop, but woe betide you if you don't behave yourself." So so I did behave myself.
How were the officers seen, generally?
Oh, well, they were only not much older than us, and they were aircrew trained as well. I was 20, 21, and he might have been about 26 or something like that, so... I don't know, he mightn't have been much of an angel himself either, for that matter, but we just accepted them, you know. I've never had any trouble with the officers in the Air Force, really. I think from what Dad said on the railway and whatnot, he wasn't that impressed with some of the officers. But
why not?
Oh, well, I got the impression that they didn't do much work. I think it was mainly the other ranks that did most of the hard yakka, all those, some of the officers no doubt, or some of the doctors in particular, Dad was so impressed with blokes like Weary Dunlop and that. So you can't generalise, but there were some that he wasn't very fond of, I know that much.